Okay, I have 10:40, so we'll call the Audit Compliance and Title IX Committee meeting to order. Can we have roll call?
Chair Carter.
Here.
Vice Chair McAdoo. Regent Arriscada.
Here.
Regent Dubrava.
Here.
Regent Geddes.
Here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment in Las Vegas?
None.
Was that a no? Okay. Was there any in Elko? I hear a no. Any in Reno here? No public comment then. We'll move on to item number two, consent items. Do you have a motion? No motion on item two, consent items.
So moved.
I'll make a motion.
There we go.
Dubrava.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Go on to my chair's report. I really don't have a whole lot to say today, so I'm just going to move on to item number four. Grants and contracts, TMCC. Chief Internal Auditor, Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter, for the record. Joe Sunbury, Chief Internal Auditor. In the audit summary document, I've included a table of reports being presented today, as well as updates on the follow-up audits that were just kindly approved a few moments ago. As always, I want to say thank you to the institutions with the reports being presented today. The first audit report today is the Grant and Contracts Audit at TMCC. As noted in the audit summary, there are recommendations in a handful of areas. And before I get into that, I wanted to give this committee a brief history. This is an area we have audited before during my time here, and I went back and did a little compare and contrast. We had provided a deliverable on the same topic at the December 2015 meeting, and my first observation is that none of us have aged a bit since then. But way back in December 2015, this audit yielded findings in quite a few areas. There was effort reporting, award documentation, cash management, closeout procedures, expenditures, indirect costs, cost share, and reporting requirements. So I share that to provide some context today. There's definitely a positive trend where only three of those eight areas I just mentioned are included in this report, so I did want to mark that improvement. And the one area that is new as it relates to this audit is in our award file reviews, where based on one of the scenarios in our samples, we're recommending that the college's sponsored program agreements be signed by the president in line with policy, but also that ensures agreements are appropriately vetted within the college prior to signing and you have that proper accountability. So, thank you.
Do we have any questions, discussion, or a motion from anybody on the committee?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Regent Michael, second from Geddes. Any questions or comments? All in favor of accepting the report, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. We'll move on to item number five, Disability Resource Center, Nevada State College. Chief Internal Auditor, Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. The next report up today is the Nevada State College Disability Resource Center. And a couple things on this item. This is an area, it's going to check a lot of boxes on our risk area, right? There's financial, regulatory, operational, reputational, health and safety. And prior to our risk assessment revamp a few years ago, we may not have even considered an audit in this area if we were focused solely on financial risk, but it is quite important. So we took our time, we developed a thorough audit program focusing on processes on how students are identified, how they receive assistance, evaluating accessibility to facilities, reviewing training, protection of records, how student feedback is obtained, in addition to what you'd normally expect from us, testing expenditures, the dollars and cents. And I think this is the second time in my nearly 7 years here where we don't have any recommendations. That said, we hope the report and the deliverable itself contains useful information for the committee in terms of recent trends and number of students registered within the center, as well as a breakdown of the type of assistance and accommodations. So thank you very much, and thanks to NSC.
Kudos to President Pollard, and pass on that to all those folks involved. That is very rare for there not to be something on the report. Questions or discussion or a motion?
I'll make the motion to accept the report.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion from Regent McAdoo. We have a second from Regent DeBrava, and then we have some comments from Regent Ariscotta.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you were waiting. President Pollard and Mr. Sunbury, throughout this process of the auditing, what and how much input was provided by not just students, faculty, staff, but was there input? Was there any questions? Was there a fine-tooth comb that went over everything in regards to the appropriate accommodations being set forth for the greatest success of these students with disabilities?
Darian Pollard, what I would offer, and I'll defer to the our internal auditor to speak to the scope of this particular audit, because I think that might be able to respond to the questions. I'm not quite sure if the full representation of the institution's response to students who utilize these services was the subject of the audit, but I'll certainly defer to our esteemed auditor to give a more definitive response as to the scope.
Thank you, President Pollard, and thank you for the question, Regent Ariscotta. So in terms of our sample sizes and whatnot, as it relates to expenditures, we probably tested about 40% of the overall population. But in terms of testing for accommodations specifically, we probably had a sample that was closer to about 15%. And in that, we're trying to ensure verification that intake meetings are occurring between the student and the disability specialists, that the student has completed their class accommodation request forms, that there's adequate supporting documentation to support the request, the accommodation requested. So that would be things like medical doctor opinions, individualized education program from Clark County Education System that noted basis for accommodation. And then determining if that documentation was retained and really that the institution did its due diligence, right, by the whether it was the DRC specialist or that team to support that, the proper determination of those services that the students were eligible for. I hope that helps a little.
Thank you.
Any other questions or discussion? We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. We'll go on to item number six, social media, Nevada System of Higher Education System Office, Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. The next report up today is the social media follow-up report. So we did one of these back in the 2015-2016 timeframe as well. And we found that the system office had sufficient oversight and management of social media activities, but it was more formalizing the documentation that we felt may be prudent. And so the idea here was we wanted to take a fresh look at this area and highlight some of the important risks to consider. And we do have some similar recommendations now, essentially creation of a social media charter and ultimately developing policies for inclusion in the handbook or the procedures and guidelines manual, considering proper stakeholder input. And we want to be careful, internal audit shouldn't be writing or dictating policy that it would then be asked to audit against. But my IT auditor, Alex, who this committee knows quite well, did include some ideas based on best practices for items that, should be considered for incorporation into any policy development. Thank you.
Questions or discussion for Mr. Sunbury?
Question.
Regent Ariscotta.
Kind of segueing off of the previous item, number five, in regards to social media, and one of the unknown, mostly unrecognized expenditures in regards to accessibility for people with disabilities, and you stated the word full inclusion, is access to IT, mostly for visually impairment, hearing impairment, regardless if it is social media and or websites. I just want to give the full assurance and receive the assurance that these items will be accessible for individuals with visual and hearing impairments. that if or when we review this further and we get deeper into the dive, that the expenditures are going to be made for full inclusivity for all students with disabilities to have equal access on their campuses and higher education. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussion or motion?
Bridget McMichael, I have a question.
Bridget McMichael?
Yes, under the IT security risks for passwords, what do you recommend as far as how many characters and how often should you change your password?
I don't think that I appreciate the question. I don't think that that really falls in the scope of what Joe Sunbury could answer. But we have cybersecurity folks that could definitely help us when we design this policy. That's definitely what we could consider and make recommendations on. I don't know if you wanted to add anything.
Sure. Regent McMichael, thanks for the question. So I don't have a good answer for you today at the moment, but I do know that my IT auditor does sit on ENCHI's NIST Cybersecurity Framework Working Group, and that's a collaborative group, meets, I believe, or at least they were meeting biweekly. It's been, you know, they've been doing that for a while now, and they've spent a lot of time going through, you know, in NIST, by the way, just for anyone that's not auditors use a lot of lingo, but National Institute of Standards and Technology. So that's a very widely used cybersecurity framework. And the ENCHI board actually requires each institution to update their current and target profiles every couple of years. So there's an ongoing group that you know, plans, and I think somewhere embedded in there is probably the answer to your question. So I will get back to you on it, but I think that's probably the place where I can at least get the answer. Thanks.
All right, thank you.
Do we have a motion?
Motion to approve.
A motion, do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other questions or discussion? I do want to say I appreciate the feedback here, and I think this is a project that we need to take on either as a system or a board to kind of dial in what our social media policy, you know, looks like. So maybe we can put that back on the agenda in a different committee you know, for next year. Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, seeing none, we have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. So we'll move on to item number 7, internal audit compliance and Title IX updates. Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. So we introduced this section. It's a standing item so we can provide departmental updates and, more importantly, have that placeholder to discuss, you know, anything related to risk. So this committee's heard me in the past update on financial aid-related findings, walk through our updated risk assessment methodologies, and speak about work that internal audit was doing related to other board initiatives. So for the third meeting in a row, we actually have our external auditors joining us, and I saw her walk in a little bit ago. So I know everyone's very excited to hear from them, so I will be brief. But I do appreciate your indulgence. I have two items for this committee. The first is a departmental update, and I'm proud to say that we learned just last week that ENCHI Internal Audit has been selected to speak at a national conference for ACUA, the Association of College and University Auditors. And the topic is something that this committee has been extremely supportive of in the past, and that is, you know, finding places beyond traditional auditing where the team can add value. And specifically, I'm going to co-present with my internal audit manager in Las Vegas, who served in an interim controller capacity for a good 5 months recently at Nevada State College. And I think this was a great example of internal audit adding value to the organization in a unique way. Definitely stepping outside of the comfort zone, but in the spirit of maximizing value, providing management services, and helping to save overall costs. So our audience for that presentation in September will be a bunch of rowdy auditors. And so we'll talk through how we set up the project, safeguards and controls we have in place to ensure we're conforming with our professional practice standards. But I'm really thrilled and humbled to be able to share the story and share that with this group, because I think it was a great success and certainly a positive example to share with the profession and maybe inspire other audit teams. So I will I'll pause there before shifting gears to compliance. Thanks.
Any questions about that or discussion? I think that's fantastic. Do you have any idea how many people applied to be a speaker for that?
I don't. I mean, it's a 4-day conference. It actually is in Las Vegas if anyone wants to attend. And I understand if you don't. It's a pretty small number. So we were honored to be selected. So the other item I have in this section relates to compliance. Oh, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say congratulations to you and your team for serving NSHE so well. It's an honor for all of NSHE, even though it's the audit department's giving it. So thank you for all you do for us, Joe.
Thank you. Oh goodness. I'll send your applause down to Las Vegas to my audit manager, who actually does the work. So the other item I have, thank you, it relates to compliance updates. And as promised at the last meeting, NABEX, which is the company that helps administer our third-party hotline and web service, provided some global benchmarking information. And right on cue, earlier this quarter, they released that full benchmarking report. That report's about 50 pages long, and I should have thought of this ahead of time, but I'm happy to send that to this committee or to the full board if they'd be interested. It actually is kind of an interesting report. But we were able to include some high-level trends and comparisons in the attached briefing memo that's associated with this update. And I won't sit here and read that verbatim, but did want to compare a couple of discussions from and benchmarks from the recent report to what we're doing here at NSHE. So first, from a volume perspective, the benchmarking report stated that overall reporting volume kind of restabilized in 2021 with higher volumes toward the end of the year. And that's actually spot on with the trend that NSHE has seen. Late in 2021 and early in 2022, we've seen a slight uptick in our volume compared to the rest of the past year, and then obviously 2020 with COVID. Another trend in the benchmarking report that was noted, which is in lockstep with the data we're seeing, is the decline of anonymous reporting. And while we're seeing that decline, it is very important that employees know that that option exists, because sometimes that ability to remain anonymous does encourage someone to maybe make that call or submit that concern, and I think it's just a best practice feature in any incident management system. One of the items that was tracked, and I had never really noticed it before, but it was within the details of the benchmarking report, and it was this concept of, you know, tracking allegations versus inquiries. And I'm actually going to go back through our data, and I think we'll begin categorizing that and tracking it in the future. It's useful because both types of reports provide valuable insight, right? And allegations are important points of concern or incidents that employees have really trusted the organization to look into, whereas inquiries are more like requests for guidance, but they can also highlight key areas where additional training may be needed, or policies that may need to be refreshed. Now, in the benchmarking report, it was about 90% allegations, 10% inquiries, and just kind of doing the back of the napkin math and thinking about our volume, we're probably about in that same boat. And then the last item I'll mention, and again, I think the latest benchmarking report gave me some good food for thought on what information may be useful to this committee and this board. I think we've done an okay job of telling you, you know, where some of these calls are going and its current status, but ultimately categorizing the report outcomes is really important, right? Even if that outcome is no action. And so when looking at the benchmarking report, most companies state that nearly half of the reports that they receive result in no action, either because it was unable to be substantiated or perhaps it was deemed to be within policy, et cetera, et cetera. But the potential action items, whether it's discipline, policy change, additional training, categories like that, especially if we have that benchmarking info, I think would be useful to share with this committee going forward. So, you know, we'll continue to evolve on this and aim to provide that going forward. So thank you.
Any questions from Mr. Sunbury? Seeing none. The audit summary was at the beginning of our agenda. Did you want to say anything about it or call any attention to anything in there?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
The audit summary was was on our agenda as well. I didn't know if there was anything in there that you wanted to reference.
Oh, sure. So the audit summary, and we spoke to most of it. The only other thing I'll call out is there's a follow-up item in there related to our quality assurance review, which is kind of the who audits the auditors, right? And so we do have some items in there, and much like the pain some of our institutions feel to make sure we're following up and make sure we're actually doing what we say we're going to do, we've got that, and we'll be implementing a few things related to that starting with this next fiscal year. So, thanks.
Okay, seeing no more questions, we will move on to communication with those charged with governance, UNLV Medicine. That would be item number 8. Kim McCormick, gracing us for the third meeting in a row.
Thank you. Thank you, Regent Carter. Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you. So my report out today relates specifically to UNLV Medicine, and you may recall when we met in early December, I reported out to you about the results of the financial statement audit for UNLV Medicine. That was for the year ended June 30, 2021. UNLV Medicine, of course, has the practice plan in Las Vegas, and it has had financial statement audits since inception. But Fiscal 21 was the first year UNLV Medicine was lucky enough to tip the threshold to need a second audit that's required by the federal government for organizations that are recipient of federal grants and contracts. And so this is the first audit report out for what we call the Uniform Guidance Audit or the Single Audit. Just to give you some perspective, for fiscal 21, UNLV Medicine received a little bit over $1 million in federal aid. That was in three different programs. One of those programs is the one that tipped what is a $750,000 threshold to meet the audit. And that was a program that came from Department of Health and Human Services, and it related to reimbursing UNLV Medicine for costs associated with treatment and testing for COVID-19 for the uninsured patients that visited. So that context for that particular audit and some of the ins and the outs are in agenda item number 8. I'll pause to see if there's any questions on that before we move on to agenda number item 9, which talks about the results of that audit.
Any questions? I guess we can move on to item number 9.
All right. Item number 9, and I should say Kim McCormick for the record, Grant Thornton, I missed that on the outset. This is the end product of UNLV Medicine's financial reporting for the year. It includes the financial statements that we talked about back in December, and at the tail end of the document is the results of the audit that I just mentioned. This is the document that actually gets filed with the federal government so they can see that the audit was conducted. I'm happy to report that our opinion on this program was an unmodified opinion or a clean opinion, that we believe the organization complied with the rules that we were asked to test. Primarily, it related to just making sure that UNLV Medicine had gone through the process of vetting out those patients to make sure that they were, in fact, uninsured before a reimbursement for their visit took place. So good news there, no material weaknesses, no reportable findings in our report. It was a nice, clean audit.
That's from my mic. Any questions? I guess just for...
Do you need a motion to approve?
Okay, a motion to approve. Do we have a second? Second from Regent Arascata. Just to put on the record, what is the... we usually don't have external audits this late into the year. If you could just kind of give us a little more information as to how it ended up being all the way to June.
Yeah, that's a good question. The original plan for this uniform guidance audit was to conduct it at the same time as the financial statement audit. UNLV Medicine wasn't quite ready for us to start that audit, so it got delayed and it got pushed until a later time. And so we conducted the audit when they were ready, and it's now ready to report now. I should mention also it was done about a month ago, and it officially got filed with the federal government just earlier this week. This is the first uniform guidance audit, again, for UNLV Medicine, and I understand it will need another one for June 30, 22. So I think the expectation is that all of it will be conducted and completed at the same time as the financial statement audit for 2022.
Very good. Any other questions or comments?
Chair Carter.
Yes, Regent DeBrava.
Thank you. This is a question for Ms. McCormick or for Jean Bach, if she's there. Just for clarification, this is audits regarding UNLV Medicine Incorporated. Has the name been changed for future for UNLV Health, or is that kind of a separate thing? If someone could just clarify us, please.
Jean Bach.
Good morning, Jean Bach, for the record. Hello, everyone. We also have Joanne Strobe and Dean Mark Kahn on virtually if there's additional information needed, but I will give the brief answer, and I see that Mark is zooming in right now, so he perhaps can respond further. But we are, UNLV Medicine is the official name, but they've been approved to operate as UNLV Health, so either is an accurate term to use. Is it okay if Mark then?
That's correct. It's a DBA doing business as it's out as a file, but yes, either are correct.
Thank you for the clarification. Thank you, Chair Carter.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Move on to item number 10, new business. Do we have any new business? Hearing none, seeing none. We'll move on to item 11, public comment. Do we have any public comment in ELCO?
There's no public comment in ELCO.
Fantastic. Do we have any public comment in Las Vegas?
There is none.
There's none. Any comments in Reno here? Does not appear so. So this meeting is adjourned.